public expressions of grief for the death of the Queen by those who see the royals as a glamorous family contributing millions of dollars into the UK economy each year, for instance, in tourism revenues. But that sentiment seems to be changing, with growing calls for Britain to become a republic. The reasons for that transformation vary, but one argument used on both sides of the divide is money, taxpayer money, more than $130 million of it, granted by the British government to the royal family, covering their official parties, travels, security, and upkeep of their palaces, funds that anti-monarchists say could be spent on more urgent matters.
So why, for a family that already has so many riches, why don't they pay for that? You know, why does that come out of the public pocket? Because especially in this time where we need public funds for the cost of living crisis, I mean, we've got so many underfunded public services here.
I don't think it sets a good precedent for the way, like, taxpayers' money is spent. Give it to the NHS.
The National Public Service is not the only area that needs help. There's the deepening cost of living crisis, driven by soaring energy costs and an economy on the brink of recession.
People are going to suffer fuel poverty over this winter, and that without intervention of a fairly drastic nature, people are going to have to decide whether to heat their homes or to eat. Now, this seems a total obscenity in a nation which is one of the G6.
The British monarchy has an estimated wealth of more than $90 billion and privileges not available to the rest of the public.
We have Prince Charles, who is about to inherit the world's wealthiest woman's entire portfolio without an inheritance tax. That is a loss of literally hundreds of millions to the exchequer.
The past few months have seen multiple public sector strikes, mostly over pay, to keep up with the soaring cost of living that's pushing millions of people into poverty. It remains to be seen if the House of Windsor will continue to live on the public dime, and if so, what will the public do about it? Saeed Pourreza, London.
After 1 year under the Taliban control, Afghanistan is on the brink of economic collapse. This is according to the latest update by the World Food Programme. The UN body says the economic crisis wiped out jobs, salaries, and livelihoods across Afghanistan, limiting people's purchasing power. The WFP has called on the international community to step up its efforts before winter to avert a humanitarian catastrophe.
Today, I came to the bazaar to buy some food. As I checked the prices and the money in my pocket, I couldn't afford a sack of rice. I'm sure others are facing the same situation. We call on the Taliban and the international community to take steps towards fixing Afghanistan's worsening economy.
Here on a Kabul street, Afghans sell household items to escape poverty and keep food on the plate. These people say it's a matter of survival for them. They are also concerned about their future.
We are just trying to survive in this difficult economic situation. We are forced to sell our belongings and household items to put bread on the table. Some are selling second-hand items to pay their debt and bills, since they have been unemployed for months. I don't know what I will do in the coming month to make ends meet.
The Taliban Deputy Economy Minister blamed the economic crisis on 2 decades of U.S. occupation and Washington sanctions on the war-ravaged country.
Today's deteriorating economic situation in our country is a legacy of the U.S. invasion, because the U.S. never let Afghan national economic bodies grow or become self-sufficient. All the U.S. did was to keep Afghanistan a consumer country and dependent on U.S. aid. Likewise, after the withdrawal, the U.S. seized Afghanistan's assets and cut international funding. As a result, the U.S. is to blame for Afghanistan's fragile economy.
In the meantime, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has announced that 25 million people in Afghanistan are living in poverty. and 19 million people are facing food insecurity. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres arrived in Pakistan to see climate-induced devastation from months of deadly record floods that have left 500,000 people living in tents under the open sky and have left nearly 1,400 deaths. During his visit, the UN chief and Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif discussed the latest situation in the country. The two focused on joint efforts to carry out relief, rescue, and rehabilitation at the international level to mitigate the sufferings of the flood-affected people. Later, the visiting UN chief also met Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and assured him of every support possible. The UN Secretary General, who has launched a global appeal to raise $160 million in flood assistance for Pakistan, says Pakistan is one of the countries most affected by climate change in recent months.
Developed countries must step up and provide Pakistan and other countries on the front lines with the financial and technical resources they need to survive extreme weather events like these deadly floods.
Bhutto said that his government is trying its best to help people who had lost everything in floods, but international help would be required to overcome the catastrophe.
I cannot shelter 33 million families. I cannot provide the food and clothing for 35 million families. We don't have the infrastructure in place. And this is just the rescue and relief phase.
The UN chief will travel to areas most impacted by the climate catastrophe. He will interact with the displaced families and oversee the UN's humanitarian response and relief efforts for millions of affected people.
As the floods continue to ravage Pakistan, UN agencies and several countries continue to send aid to flood-affected people in recent weeks. However, Pakistani authorities believe that more assistance is required to help millions of flood victims. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
The poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a social safety net for those who are on bottom as far as health care is concerned and other basic necessities. But since Macron got elected, a lot of those things have changed because Macron has decided that he's going to attack that social safety net.
The report showed that a near-universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين
لبيك يا حسين
لبيك يا حسين
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum. We are here near Haram Hazrat Abbas. And I want to talk to a lady who has the honor of being the pilgrim of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Hazrat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
What is your name?
My name is Sarah Bukhari and I've come from London. I'm a student of international politics and I work for a channel, a media channel.
Good. Which media?
It's called Safir TV. It's recently launched in Muharram, or over Ramadan period, but recently during Muharram. And it features Ahl Bayt media in the English language across the world.
Very good. Have you been to Karbala before this?
Alhamdulillah, this is like my 9th trip to Karbala. So since I was 15 years old, I'm 21 now, I've had various opportunities. But Arba'een time, this is my 3rd time. And I find that every time you come, it's a different experience entirely. People always say, you know, when should I come for ziyarah? Should I come during Arba'een period or during other seasons? But in all honesty, each season has its own benefits. And this time is phenomenal in the sense that the most people visit Karbala at this time. And it's amazing being part of that crowd.
Can you tell a little about differences between this trip and other trips? I'm just talking about the differences between this spiritual journey and other journeys.
Arba'een for me, I think, is mainly in the 3-day walk from Najaf to Karbala. And this is a distinct aspect of the Arba'een trip because during this time you have the ability to witness the generosity of the pilgrims for the love of Imam Hussein. You find a lot of service being carried out in his name and you really understand what the meaning of love is from here. You understand a very humanitarian perspective of Imam Hussein's message because everybody unites under this banner of serving him and loving him for the sake of God and for the sake of humanity. In other seasons, I think you get more of a personal time in the Haram, so you get to visit Abu Fadl alayhi salam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and it's very private because you can go to the Zari, you can go to the shrine, you can send your salams, you can really pour out your emotion. But in this time, I think it's more a time of unity in the Muslim Ummah. I think it is the world's largest gathering, world's largest peace gathering. So in terms of globalization, it brings together people of all different backgrounds, different nationalities, different creeds, different religions. You'll even see Christians and Sikhs here, which is phenomenal. Even me being a Westerner and being here, people get surprised at the fact that you've come all the way from London to actually display your love for Abu Abdullah alayhi salam. It's truly an honor to be part of this crowd because you feel as if it's also in relation to the 12th Imam. You feel this huge connection with him in this time because the people who are walking are displaying these attributes of one who is literally a servant to him. And to be classified as a servant to him, it's an amazing honor, and you really do feel the benefits of being in the mercy and the generosity of the Ahl Bayt in this time.
And can you tell our audience why such a thing happened? People try to serve pilgrims of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
I think the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is so incredible that anybody who falls in love with him wants to not only love him, not only love God because he died for the path of God and for the path of truth, but you end up falling in love with the principles that he had. Imam Hussein alayhi salam as a person was the most generous person. You find on the day of Ashura he gave water to the people who he knew were going to kill him and murder him and his family. Even so, they displayed acts of animosity and and envy and hatred towards him, he still always replied with love and compassion and mercy to mankind. And even on the day of Ashura, you find that Imam Hussein puts his cheek on the cheek of John the Slave, a black man, an African man, who's come from various different continents, but Imam Hussein Nissan brings him under his army. You also find Umm al-Wahhab, who is the mother of Wahhab, who's also a Christian man who was passing on the day of Ashura. He wasn't particularly Muslim, he definitely wasn't Shia, but Imam Hussein Nissan had this love for him. Similarly, I think in Arvain time, when you serve the lovers of Imam Hussein, you feel this beauty because it's a connection between you and Allah. You see, even Prophet Isa alayhi salam is somebody that they say in his Last Supper, he washed the feet of his disciples. He looked after the people who were around him. And he did this as a prophet of Allah to show that humility is a key to reaching Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And I think in this time, in the name of Imam Hussein, when people love Imam Hussein, they literally want to love everything to do with him. They want to love each other. They want to love him. They want to love the people who love him. And that's why you say, Inni salamun liman salamakum, I'm at peace with those who are at peace with you. Because you really do fall in love with the entire, like the width and the vastness of this love encompasses everybody. Similarly, Imam Hussein is just, it really emphasizes the aspect of service in Islam. Islam is a religion of service. Whether you are a king or you are a poor person, everybody has this aspect of giving and generosity. And Ahl Bayt al-Islam are known to be the most generous of mankind, and I think this is why we spend our time giving. Just some people here are phenomenal. They literally spend their entire year saving up money just so they can buy things just to give out to the Zawar and the pilgrims. It really puts your life into perspective, especially as a Westerner, because you feel as if we can be so selfish in our lifestyles. We can be very focused on the materialism of our own lifestyles. But you come here and you see people who give away everything that they have for the sake of Aba Abdullah. It really is a lesson of humility above all, and it's amazing to be a part of it.
Thank you. And the last question, what do you want from Imam Hussein alayhi salam?
Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I think if he ever looked at me as his servant, I think I would feel accomplished in life, because I never want to have the arrogance to say that I'm a servant of Hussein, but I pray that in his eyes he sees me as that, because as a human being, there's nothing more that you want than to be in the realms of their mercy and actually encompass the values that they had. If I can, by the end of my life, say that I've lived a life in the service of Hussein, because from him I learn how to love, I learn how to give. I learn the meaning of truth. I learn the meaning of justice. I learn the meaning of equality in mankind. If I can encompass these values in my own lifestyle, I'd say that I'm a person who died successful. And like Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Fustu wa Rabbil Ka'aba," they die with a certainty that they died in the path of Allah. If I can die with that message in the name of Hussein, with the love of Hussein, I feel as if I'll be successful. And this is why Ziyarah is so important. I've been coming on Ziyarah since I was about 6 years old, 7 years old. And every time I come, I build on this relationship between me and my imam. When you have the ability to build on your relationship, you realize that they're not people who are dead, they are alive. So when you visit them, they are literally your teacher. They can be a scholar, they can be somebody who gives to you, somebody who teaches you, somebody who loves you. And when they do that, you realize that this connection is so alive that there's nothing, no one is more alive than Imam Hussein in my life. So for me, he is the biggest inspiration, biggest role model in my life to become like him in the service of him. And inshallah, that's what I pray for myself and everybody else who's also present here in Arba'in in Karbala.
Inshallah. Thanks a lot.
So, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Hope you have instilled in our heart, in a world where hopes disappear. Peace you have ingrained in our soul, in a time when peace becomes rare. Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it awaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue continue the message when you passed through arid sands, met foreigners of new land.
I want to talk to a pilgrim of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
What's your name, sir?
Muhammad Ali.
Where do you come from?
Germany.
So you're German. How many times have you been to Karbala on Arbaeen?
Two times. It's my second time now.
Okay, did you get here on foot?
Everywhere. So you get foot everywhere.
No. Did you get here? Did you walk to Karbala from Najaf?
Yes, we walked.
Can you talk a little about the atmosphere on the way to Karbala?
It's a nice experience, and a lot of people, and you meet many people, you get to know many people.
Don't you want to talk about the Iraqi's hospitality? That is the way they treated you?
And you say like they love guests, and if you need something, they also let you come into your house if you want, for example, to take a shower. They open the doors for you. Yeah, they give, and they invite you to eat, and they love guests.
How does this journey differ from other journeys?
So it depends from the spiritual atmosphere and many people, and friendly people, and it's very crowded, and it's amazing how crowded it is, how many people come, and how many people like to join in this spiritual atmosphere.
What makes people walk such a long distance toward Imam Hussein alayhi salam?
The love to Imam Hussein, to Ahl Bayt, and remembering the Islamic resistance.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask you about a thing you will want from God under the dome of Imam Hussein alayhi salam?
The unity of all Muslims, of Shia and Sunni Muslims, and of all races and nations, and guidance of my family who are all non-Muslims. And victory of Palestine, of the people in Iraq, Afghanistan, Burma, Central Africa, and everywhere.
We hope so. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Dear listeners, thanks for being with us. For now, bye.
From my heart.
these words are coming.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned. There is an authentic narration by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam in which he states, "Once when I was about 6 years old, I went to my grandfather, Prophet Muhammad. A man by the name of Ubay ibn Ka'b was sitting next to the Prophet. When I entered the room, Prophet Muhammad stated, 'Very welcome, dear Abu Abdullah, the glory of the heavens and earth.'"
Abi Abdullah mifarmayad Ubay e'tiraz kard gov ya Rasulullah zinat asman o zamin khod shomayi.
Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam continues, Ubay said, "O Prophet of Allah, you are the glory of the heavens and the earth, and not this key." Prophet Muhammad, upon hearing this, stated, "O Ubay, I swear by the God who selected me as his prophet that al-Husayn is more glorious in the heavens compared to the earth. The inhabitants of the heavens know al-Husayn more than those on the earth." This statement of Prophet Muhammad shows the exalted status of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Arbaeen March, the story of love. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Arbaeen means 40 in Arabic, but today it is known as the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, in the year 61 AH. This day owes its importance and significance to some historical accounts which say that the survivors of the tragedy of Ashura returned to Karbala on this day and visited the graves of Imam Hussein, Hazrat Abbas, and other martyrs to revive their pledge of allegiance with them and keep their goal and ideal alive. Every year, a few weeks before Arbaeen, people start their journey on foot toward the holy shrine of Imam Hussein from southernmost regions of Iraq. Moreover, Muslims from Iran and other Muslim countries also get prepared to participate in this indescribable journey of love. Every year, the number of pilgrims and lovers increases, and people from all walks of life gather together and march shoulder to shoulder toward the Kaaba of love. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says on the Arbaeen March, "The combination of love with faith and intellect with emotion is among the unique characteristics of the school of the Ahlul Bayt, peace upon them, and the loving and faithful move of the people of different countries in this unprecedented phenomenon is undoubtedly among the divine sacraments. Tens of millions of people converge in this glorious gathering to announce their love and obedience to the Ahlul Bayt of Prophet of Islam. For sure, great ulema and sources of emulation have played an important role in promotion of Arbaeen March. Late source of emulation, Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Taghi Bahjat said, "It has been narrated that when the Imam of the age, Imam Mahdi, re-emerges, he introduces himself to the world through Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Thus, at that time, all world people should have known Hussein, peace upon him. But all world people do not know Hussein yet, and this is our shortcoming, as we have not shouted in a way that the world hears our voice. The Arbaeen March is the best opportunity to introduce Hussein, peace upon him, to the world." Mirza Jawad Maliki Tabrizi, one of the greatest ulema of the last century, also has said, "It is necessary for the devoted faithful to consider Arbaeen as his day of grief and mourning and try to visit the martyred Imam at his tomb, even if it happens once in his whole life. It is because the noble hadith mentions 5 things for a faithful. 51 rak'at prayer during day and night. Ziyarat arba'in, wearing a ring on the right hand, prostrating on soil and uttering Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim loudly in prayers. Imam Musa Sadr was the leader of the Lebanese Shia Muslims who was abducted by the agents of the Zionist regime and the former Libyan ruler Muammar Gaddafi in 1978. In his youth, when he was in Najaf, he used to march from Najaf to Karbala for Arba'in. During his journey, he used to recite supplications and ziyarats, or a standard form of salutation to Imam Hussein, with tears in his eyes. As it has been said several times, Imam Hussein does not belong to Shia or even Muslims. He belongs to mankind. These days, one can see and hear this phrase frequently. Hubbul Hussein yajma'una, meaning Hussein's love brings us together. Or simply, Al Hussein yajma'una means Hussein brings us together. Yes, Hussein is the center of unity and convergence of scores of millions of pure hearts from all over the world. Sheikh A'la is a Christian professor of Baghdad University who has devoted himself to the service of the pilgrims of Imam Hussein. The 7-year-old man says that he has come to the mukeb of a friend to serve pilgrims. He is at Isa ibn Maryam mukeb. He says that Imam Hussein endured many calamities which resembled those of Prophet Jesus. He says, "We are beside the lovers of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Imam Hussein does not belong only to Shia or Sunni Muslims, but he belongs to all free-spirited people of the world. That's why today people from different strata, whether Muslim or Christian, have converged in this huge gathering." Alexander Dugin is a Russian writer and a strategist who had once taken part in Arba'in March from Najaf to Karbala. He describes this magnanimous phenomenon. "In my opinion, the Arba'in March, which has found global dimensions on a daily basis, and people from every nationality and religion, including Christians, participate in it, is an introduction to a fundamental development on the world. I have this several times, that the modern world with its liberalist and capitalist ideology has come to an end and it has no achievement for mankind except causing crisis. And human being today needs a spiritual and divine resurrection whose grounds strongly exist in the Islamic revolution and the uprising of Imam Khomeini." This Russian writer likens the Arba'in March to an apocalyptic move, saying, "This march is an important sign of preparation for a global and apocalyptic spiritual development. I, as an Orthodox Christian, agree with the apocalyptic approach of the Islamic Revolution and hope that this grand event, which the followers of all religions wait for, won't be much far. The Arba'in March is more like an apocalyptic event rather than ordinary and usual one. We and all those who seek justice and spirituality in the dark and bleak modern world should unite together, as this march is a manifestation of unity.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So inshallah, today we'll work on the next ayah, the fifth ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah. Make sure you have listened to the previous ayat, verses of the Quran Kareem, Surah Al-Baqarah, inshallah. Today, the same as the previous days, we'll explain a little, okay, the fifth ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah, then inshallah, we'll work on the tajweed rules. So, but before we start, let's listen to this ayah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ألف لام ميم. ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه. هدى للمتقين. الذين يؤمنون بالغيب ويقيمون الصلاة ومما رزقناهم ينفقون والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك وما أنزل من قبلك وبالآخرة هم يوقنون أولئك على هدى من ربهم وأولئك هم المفلحون إن الذين كفروا سواء عليهم أأنذرتهم أم لم تنذرهم لا يؤمنون.
Yeah, alhamdulillah, that was a nice recitation. Now let's, inshallah, recite it together. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
أولئك على هدى من ربهم.
أولئك على هدى من ربهم
وأولئك هم المفلحون.
وأولئك هم المفلحون.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسن. In this ayah again, Allah Almighty talks about the muttaqeen in the second ayah that we had. Yes? ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه هدى للمتقين. So, there were many characteristics for the muttaqeen, those who are pious, those who are God-wary. And for example, الذين يؤمنون بالغيب, those who believe in عالم الغيب, الذين ويقيمون الصلاة, those who maintain the prayers, ومما رزقناهم ينفقون, and they spend from what we have provided them with. Yes? The knowledge, whatever. And والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك, and those who believe in what we have sent down to you, Prophet, what Allah Almighty had sent to the Prophet, to our Prophet,
Quran,
the Quran Kareem. Right, Fawad? What?
Quran Kareem.
Quran Kareem. And وما أنزل من قبلك, whatever we have sent down before you to the other prophets, the other books, in Bible, Torah, Zabur, and any other books, okay? That Allah Almighty has sent to the other prophets, the other scriptures, divine scriptures, okay? وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُقْنُونَ, and they are those who believe in the day of judgment, okay? Those who have faith. يُقْنُونَ, it means they have faith, strong faith, okay? And then, in the next ayah, again, Allah Almighty says something about them, a very important point. أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ, okay? وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ, they are those who follow their Lord's guidance. Okay? أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ, Allah Almighty guides them to the right path. Allah Almighty has given them the opportunity to be Muslim. They were born Muslim, for example, okay? They were born Muslim, they were born Mu'min in a Muslim family. They have this condition, this situation they have, okay? These characteristics they have. So it is very, very much important to stay, to live Muslim, like a Muslim, okay? After this as well. There have been a lot of people, okay? First and foremost, they were like Muslims, or they were given great opportunities. But unfortunately, after some times, they committed sins, they met a lot of bad things, or they were like deprived of those blessings, okay? So it's very important that we have to stay on this path. Loving Imam Hussein is not that much important as staying in the way of Imam Hussein, okay? Staying in the way of Imam Hussein is much more better. A lot of people love, okay? But when it comes to support Imam Hussein, sorry, we're not here to support him. We just love him. So no, not like this, okay? So it's very important to stay, okay? To maintain this. Yeah? There was someone saying that, I don't pray, okay? But I pray once. Like, for example, once a week I pray. How do you pray once a week? He said that he was living in Europe, okay? In Europe, we don't have much time, okay, to go from early morning, wake up and pray, and afternoon pray, and evening pray. We don't have much time. We are too much busy. So we collect all the prayers, okay? And on Sundays Saturdays and Sundays, we are free. We do all the prayers together once, okay? No, it's not this way, okay? You gotta stay. You gotta maintain the salat we had there, yes? Maintaining the salat, the prayer, okay? Not like this. So we are free on Fridays. So is it okay if we do the prayers just only on Fridays? No, maintain the prayers. وَلَيْكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ, they are on this path, okay? Not once, always. This is important. وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلُحُونَ, as, for example, and it is they who are the felicious, okay? You know felicious? Those who are prosperous, those who are successful. مُفْلِح, it means that someone who has no pain, who has no sadness, who is fully like aware of what happens to him, aware of what good things happens to him. He is prosperous, he is successful. So muttaqin have these characteristics. And what is the result of being muttaqin, amongst muttaqin? Muflihun. We will be muflih. We will have a prosperous life. Okay? In this world and hereafter. So these were the messages, short explanations about these five ayahs, okay? Ayat, verses of the Quran Kareem in Surah Al-Baqarah. Inshallah, in the next sessions, we'll work on the next verses and we'll explain, okay? I hope you've learned something. Now, if you're ready, let's go to Tajweed rules, but recite a salawat before.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Are these things, these messages, understandable for you?
Yes,
they are. Inshallah, I hope, inshallah, they will be good lessons for first and foremost for myself, and then for you as listeners.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So, أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِّن رَّبِّهِمْ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Who can tell me what is the first important tajweed point here that we have to pay attention to?
جائز متصل.
جائز متصل أولئك
هدم.
We have أولئك, we have هدم. So what is in the first word? What تجويد rule is in the first word أولئك؟
واجب متصل. متصل.
The mad. You're talking about the mad.
Yes.
Mad جائز. جائز متصل. واجب متصل.
واجب متصل.
Yeah. أولئك واجب متصل. Okay. Listen. How do I read this? أولئك. أولئك. Oh, is it a short vowel or a long vowel? Short vowel, yes. Why is it short vowel? We have dhamma plus waw sakin, waw maddi. Ulaika. But you will never hear ulaika. Yeah? Do you hear ulaika?
No.
Like we have a u e. This has to be pronounced as waw maddi. But we don't have that one. Why? In math lessons, we had some exceptions in natural math. Ulaika, ulai, ulai. We had these words, six words were there, that they were exceptional, that you don't have to stretch. Do you remember them?
Yes.
You don't have to stretch the vowel math. Yes? Understood?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is one of those words, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to stretch the sound of this wa. Only it's pronounced as a short vowel. Ulaika. Not ulaika. Okay. And the mad here, ulaika, it is? Wajib?
Muttasil.
Why? Hussein? Why is it wajib muttasil?
Because harful mad and hamza are
harful mad and hamza are in the same word. Ula'i, 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 e hamza, ula alif mad we have here. So, how do you recite this?
Ula'ika.
Ahsan. Ula'ika. MashaAllah. MashaAllah. Ula'ika. Ala hudam min rabbihim. Is there any other point on the word ala?
Yes, maddu tabi'i.
Maddu tabi'i. And the pronunciation of the letter Ayn.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
So, Ayn, okay? It's difficult for none, like those who are native speakers of English, it's difficult for them, really difficult. I have some students that the letters Ayn and Ghain and Qaf, these three letters, really like, it's a big problem for them. It's difficult for them. For after a long time, they will learn these letters. I'm saying, for example, Quran. They say Quran, Quran. K, because we don't have qaf in English. We don't have ghain in English. We don't have ayn in English. We have a, not a. It's difficult for them. Yes. So it's challenging, but you gotta fix it. Okay, ayn. Fawad Haider had this problem. Yes.
No, I just say more heavily.
Heavily, okay.
I pronounce
this,
ala.
Say ala.
Ala.
Ah, it's good now. Say ala.
Ala.
He says ala. He kind of
confused.
He's confused of ayn and a hamza. Say
a.
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 Ala.
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 Yeah, it is confusing for him. I'll fix it, okay, inshallah.
No, hamza is a, ayn is a.
Yeah, ayn is a. So, the next point with ala, we finished. Maddu tabi'i and ayn itself. Then hudan, here, Hudan min Rabbihim. Hudan, Tanween. Then we have Mim. Tanween plus Mim.
Idra.
With Ghunna, without Ghunna?
With Ghunna.
How do you recite this, Ali Nasir?
Hudam.
Okay, recite Ulaika ala Hudam. Min Rabbihim.
أولئك على هدى من ربهم.
Was he correct?
No.
The idgham was not correct, yes?
Yes.
So, recite. We will listen to you.
أولئك على هدى من ربهم.
Was he correct for what? Recite for what?
من ربهم. He said lightly.
Uh-huh. So, recite this ayah.
هدى من ربهم.
Is it ikhfa?
No.
It's gone with ghunna. Ulaika ala hudam mir rabbihim. Hudam mir rabbihim. It's gone with ghunna, nasal sound.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Ulaika ala hudam mir rabbihim. Mir rabbihim nun sakin plus ra. It's gone without ghunna.
Heavily pronounced.
Joined mim to ra. Yeah, heavily pronounced. Rabbi. وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ أُولَٰئِكَ, again, we explained. هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ Hamzatul Wasl, you gotta skip it. Al-Muflihun, yes. Then the pronunciation of the Larha. That's all about this ayah. So, inshallah, in the next session, we will be work on the ayah 6 of Surah Al-Baqarah. So, thank you so much. Once again, we'll listen to this ayah. Listen up. Yeah, alhamdulillah, that was great. Now, let's end this session, inshallah. We'll come back with you in the next session with Ayah 6 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad wa ala. Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.